It's only a game, they say. Yet, the old Asian Indian proverb says, chess is a sea where a gnat may drink and an elephant may bathe. The blindfold checker champion of the world, Newell W. Banks, in answering the question, which is the greater game, chess or checkers, I must in all frankness favor chess. And Willard Fiske says, others may talk of the round table with its 50 knights, but I greatly prefer the square table with only 4 knights. Chess, a game played on 64 squares, including knights and bishops and others, that we're going to be talking about today on Law and Gospel here on AM 850 KFUO, Inspirational Christian Radio. This is a call-in program, and maybe some of you sports lovers will not be calling in because chess isn't a sport. It's a game. 505-7850. Toll free 1-800-730-2727. Now, maybe you don't play chess, so you're saying, well, I can skip this hour. No, you really can't, because we're not going to be talking about how to play chess. We're instead going to be talking about how chess reflects a reality of one sort. Chess reflects reality of one sort. First of all, for those of you who are not familiar with the game of chess, it actually, we believe, began in 600 AD in India. The only problem is, in those times, they weren't called kings and queens and knights and bishops. They were called things that the India population would be aware of. For instance, they had elephants instead of knights. They had different kinds of leaders, whatever the leaders in Egypt were at that time. Those were the name of the chess pieces. It's not until about the 15th century when chess became very popular in Europe that we got the pieces that we have today. And they are, of course, the king, who is to be protected at all costs, the queen, who is the most powerful individual on the entire board. It's worth 8 points. The rooks, which are worth 5 points. The bishops and the knights are each worth 3 points. And the pawns aren't even called pieces, because all they can do is go forward a little bit, and they can capture going diagonally. But unlike checkers, where you hop over pieces in order to capture them, the only piece on the board that you can hop over is the knight. The knight always goes in an L shape. 2 squares, 1 to the right, or 1 square, 2 to the right, or to the left. That's how the knight works. So a knight in the center of the board is quite powerful, for the knight can go in 8 different directions. And whatever he hops over, he hops over. But whatever he lands on, that opponent is taken away. The game of chess is simply a game, like checkers, where you try and dwindle the pieces of the other side. And you do that by strategy. You do that by thinking. I'll tell you, recently I took a little class on chess, and I was really quite amazed to see that all the years I've been playing chess, I hadn't realized all the principles that lie behind certain movements of the chess game. There are certain principles that, when you stop and think of it, it makes sense sometimes. But like theology, chess is quite contradictory. It is not always an intuitive kind of game. For example, let's say you have a piece that can take a pawn. Remember, a pawn isn't hardly even considered a piece. It's so weak. You can just move forward. Now, if a pawn reaches the end of the other side of the board, it can become whatever it wants. It can become another queen, in fact. But as it is, it's worth 1 point. A queen is worth 8 points. So pawns are critical if they reach the end, but they're not that helpful except occupying space and protecting the king. Now, here's a very simple rule that people who really know how to play chess realize that I, of course, did not. A bishop and a knight, a bishop can go diagonally. That's all he can do. And he always has to stay on the same color. So if the bishop is on white, the other side being black, then he's always on white. Never can go on black. Because he's diagonal. And diagonally, the chessboard, all the colors are the same when you go diagonally. The rook is the opposite. He can go horizontally or vertically. So he goes straight or at right angles. But not the bishop. The knight, of course, as I indicated, can jump around. Knight's very powerful under certain circumstances. However, even though they're both worth 3 points at the beginning of a game, it is said that if there are a lot of pawns in the center, then the bishop is worth more than the knight. And if the pawns are gathered along the sides, then the knight is worth more than the bishop. Now, the reason for that is because of their capability of devouring the other side, depending on whether they're in the front or on the side. But unless you know a rule like that, it's kind of like playing doubles tennis. It looks pretty simple, but sometimes they'll play Australian doubles, and what does that mean? That the person who's at the net is standing on the same side of the court as the person who is serving, which means that as soon as you serve, your job is to get on the other side to protect that, whereas the person in the middle can go either way. So, although tennis looks pretty simple, at least at the level that I play it, it's much more of a mind game than it is a game of skill. Because most of us who play at my level aren't that skilled, so you have to outthink the person. In fact, any of you involved in baseball, you will realize that that is a far more thinking sport than most people give it credit. For example, a lot of errors are done because people are not thinking properly. You pick up a ball in the outfield, and you attempted to put it all the way home, and the guy going home easily is going to make it, but it advances the other two players to base two and base three. Whereas if you had thrown it to the shortstop, they'd still be stuck on base one and base two. There's a lot of thinking. Now, interestingly enough, in what I've been reading about chess, chess is more written about than any other game. Now, I didn't say sport, because I was questioning whether, oh, there must be more about baseball and football written, and probably is. But there are numerous books on chess, and one can understand why, having gone back all the way to the 7th century in India. Now, why are we talking about chess? We're talking about chess because I indicated that it kind of imitates a way of life. And it fits right in with what we have been talking about theologically for some weeks now in regard to the two kinds of righteousness. Now, what do we mean by that? Well, let me explain that you live under a number of kinds of righteousness. If you understand righteousness in the way that you should behave, you have a different set of rules on how you are to behave depending on where you are at. As I said to the congregation last Sunday, and some of the kids were there, I said, is there a rule in the house that you can walk around at home in your underwear? They said, oh, sure, we can do that. Is there a rule at school that you cannot? Oh, yeah. Yeah, you can't walk around in your underwear at school. Now, you see, walking around in your underwear is permitted in your own home, but it's not permitted at school. So that's kind of an important kind of thing to keep in mind, that there's two kinds, and in your life there are many different sets of behaviors depending on where you're at. For example, I'm a pastor, and there's a whole new set of rules when I conduct liturgy in contrast to saying going to a beach or going to a movie. There's a different way of behaving. The liturgical role calls for a level of sanctity and a demeanor of respect that isn't necessarily needed at a carnival. In other words, you don't joke around. Somebody comes to communion and maybe they've got a funny shirt on and you start laughing about the funny shirt they have on. Well, that's just not appropriate. Whereas if you were in your front room and they came in with that shirt on, no problem at all. Or if you're at a carnival or a baseball game. So decorum changes depending on the circumstance. In regard to the spiritual realm, or from God's point of view, there are basically two kinds of righteousness, two kinds of ways of getting right. The one kind of way is getting right with God. The other kind of way is getting right with your neighbor. Or we'll talk about the two kingdoms. It's not quite church and state, as we understand it here in the United States, but it's pretty close to that. That the spiritual realm has a whole way of doing things different than the temporal realm. I'll give you one very simple example. In the temporal realm, if you, for example, are late on your income tax, you could get letters from the IRS and you could get fined. In the church, you don't get fined if you're not giving a contribution. It may not be looked upon favorably that you give no contribution, but I have as yet to hear anybody being removed from the church, at least a real church, that was not giving the contribution. That is to say, the government has the ability and the freedom to use force to get its way. We do not have that opportunity in the church. I cannot phone the police and say, you know, we've got some people here who aren't attending every week. They're falling asleep because they stayed out late the night before. We want you to talk to them and threaten to arrest them if they don't start coming to church. No, that's not going to happen. Because there's a distinction between the two kingdoms. God doesn't operate in the church the way he operates in the temporal kingdom. And that's well and good. Now, where is all this leading in regard to chess? Well, as I'm studying the game of chess, I'm coming across many, many principles as to how to move your pieces. And it's suddenly striking me in reading a number of books how close this is to real life. Now, would chess be an imitation of the kind of righteousness to get right with God? Or would chess be an imitation of the kind of righteousness that we have in regard to our neighbor? Well, let me explain a little further. The way you get right with God is by nothing you can do, because there's nothing you can do to get right with God. When you are born, you're born with original sin. You're a sinner deserving nothing but temporal and eternal punishment. And until there becomes a heart transplant and a new spirit within you, creating me a clean heart and a right spirit, O Lord, then you are never a member of the family of God. And yet that heart transplant, that is done apart from anything that you are doing. You are not cooperating in your becoming saved. Instead, when we talk about your relationship to the neighbor, that's where you can do good by your ability. In fact, you don't even need to be a Christian to be a good fireman, a fireman who may even risk his life in the call of duty to help somebody out of a fire. Now, all that God is saying is that in regard to the works you do to the neighbor, they mean nothing when God considers whether you should be saved or not. In regard to your relationship to God, your works really mean nothing, simply because there is no work that you've done where you have merited your way into heaven. So we have a situation here that in regard to the neighbor, there are many things you can choose to do. There is a way of life in regard to your neighbor. Now, if we're going to be talking about the two kinds of laws, the revealed law shows the way of righteousness to God. The natural law has many hints as to the way of righteousness to fellow men. Let me explain that. What do they mean by natural law? Well, you can just about go anywhere in the world, and the concept of murder is frowned upon everywhere. The concept of stealing is frowned upon. Now, of course, when it comes to the enemy, you can kill him. You can steal his goods, his guns, so he can't attack you. But if we're talking about a normal situation in peaceful times, murder, stealing, and in many societies, adultery, and other such things are frowned upon because that ruins the community. Now, take a look at any movie where you have a gang roaming the neighborhood. And, of course, here comes a hero who's going to beat up the gang all by himself and restore peace and quiet to the neighborhood. Now, what's the goal? Not just to get rid of the hooligans, but more to the point is to get rid of that kind of an attitude that sees others as simply objects of pleasure or displeasure, and you act accordingly because you are the center of the world. Now, the game of chess doesn't really have too much to say about how to get right with God. It's really not dealing with revealed revelation. Oh, you're tempted to do that. You think of the king as God and the queen could be Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ comes and does the bidding of the king. The only problem is the end of the game comes when the king is checkmated, which means he's in check. He can be taken by another piece, and there's nowhere he can move where he is also not in check, either from the same piece or from someone else. That's how you end the game in chess. And by the way, that can happen in two moves. That's amazing. Here you have 32 pieces on the board, and in two moves, one side can win. Now, normally it takes about 60 or 70 moves because everybody's moving up and they're trying to gather in the center and so forth, and they're trying to deplete the other people, but in time, somebody is going to be checkmated. Now, when both kings, let's say all the pieces are lost and you only have two kings, there's no way one king can checkmate another, and that's called a stalemate. So you could be behind like four or five pieces and still not lose by having a tie. Where, how does that occur? It occurs when the opponent moves in such a way that the king is not in check, but he can't move anywhere without being in check, and he has to move. There are no other pieces that can move. And if you have that kind of a situation, then that's called a stalemate. And it's a tie. Even though the other person may have six or seven more pieces on the board than you do, he still doesn't win. So going for a stalemate is an art in and of itself, because it just means you don't lose, it's a tie. Of course, to win, you get a full point. A tie, you only get half a point. But it's really quite interesting to kind of watch people play chess as they're thinking. You would think there's probably about, maybe 10 or 20 different moves that you could make in chess, and after a while you would get to know all the moves, so what else do you have to do? It's kind of like tic-tac-toe sometimes people think about. As long as you stay on the corners, you'll never lose that game. But as soon as you leave a corner, you got a chance of losing. So at least when I play, I never lose. I sometimes don't win, but I never lose. But chess is far from that. You may think that there are 30 moves. Well, there's some electronic chess games out there now that have over 1,000 different games. And that doesn't even exhaust the number of games. Well, what happens is that there are so many complex ways in which these pieces can move that after a while, you just got to learn the principles of chess in order to stay on top. A master, and if you have a chess master, that means he's really shown at tournaments that he's number one. They tell me that the difference between a chess master and a regular person is that a chess master can see 6 moves ahead, whereas me and you may be 2 moves ahead. Like if I do this, he'll maybe do that, then I can do that. That's about as far as we go. But a grand chess master, he can look 6 moves ahead. Now you're saying, how can he look 6 moves ahead? How does he know what the other guy's going to move? You see, that was my question. They now have computers that if you set up the chess pieces in a certain way and let the computer figure it out, the computer will come back and say, chessmate in 41 moves. And you're wondering, how did the computer figure that out? How does he know how the guy's going to move? Well, that actually is the best case scenario. If the fella, your opponent, doesn't move properly, you could also beat him in 22 moves instead of 41. This is only if he makes every move the way he should. He'll still lose, but it will take 41 moves. There are now computer chess games that can beat grandmasters. And I think the last time it occurred, I think Kasparov was playing a computer, and out of 6 games, he won 3.5 and the computer won 2.5. A half a game is a stalemate instead of a checkmate. All right, we've set up what I want to do. What we're going to do when we get back from the break, we're going to start talking to you about certain principles of chess that really help you understand reality outside of chess. That's right. The principles that apply to a good chess player can also be used as principles, not in the spiritual realm, because there we're moving by grace and by mercy, but in the temporal realm, where basically people get what they deserve. There are certain moves in chess that if you do them, you deserve to lose, because you're setting yourself up for a fall. There's other moves that are very, very brilliant, particularly those that are not intuitive. And when we get back, we'll start off with a game that Bobby Fischer played that most people think was the greatest game of chess ever played. And then we'll begin with talking about the principles of chess that can also apply to life in the temporal realm, a life that God expects us to follow. And by following these principles, you'll have a better life. Stay with us through the break.
Come on now, if you're listening, you don't need an excuse to support AM 850 KFUO. You're here. I mean, you like us or you wouldn't be listening. Maybe you need a little nudge, though, during August to become a day sponsor. So I want you to take a look at your calendar. Is there a birthday, an anniversary, perhaps a remembrance of a loved one that occurs during the month of August? We could certainly use your support this month. So pick up the phone and find out about how you can be a day sponsor during August.
The Pulitzer Foundation's current exhibition, Don Flavin, Constructed Light, is a show for all seasons, but during the dog days of summer, the radiant fluorescent light that permeates the building spaces might offer a quiet retreat for contemplation. Because Flavin's works are best seen in the dark, the Pulitzer is open evening hours on the first Thursday of each month. The Pulitzer Foundation for the Arts, 3716 Washington Boulevard in St. Louis, and it's free.
This is Dr. Bill Meyer with the James Dobson Family Minute. Girls and young women often are overly critical about their physical appearance, but according to my colleague Dr. Dobson, boys struggle too.
The research now shows that there is no difference in concern over body image between boys and girls. They all approach it the same way. And boys struggle in the same way that girls do. They all want to be powerful. They want to be what's called a hunk. They want to be massive. They want to be able to throw their weight around.
This trend is primarily due to the so-called perfect body image promoted through the media. Parents need to come to their kids' defense. Teach your kids to stand up to the assault against their self-worth and celebrate God's standard of beauty, which focuses on character. We can help you strengthen your child's self-image with an assortment of great resources. You can find them at our website, which is focusonyourchild.com.
Have you ever attended a Bible study where you really wanted to ask a question, but you were too embarrassed or self-conscious to speak? Are there answers you'd like to have, but you're not quite comfortable speaking with your pastor? That's why we have the weekday Ask the Pastor Bible Study. If you like, you can email your questions to me in advance at crathert@kfuo.org. It's an open phone program every Monday through Friday at 11.05 a.m. here on AM 850 KFUO.
AM 850 KFUO is underwritten in part by Reliable Heating and Cooling, with a showroom in the Mid-County Trade Center, 8463 Delport Drive. Reliable Heating and Cooling features Lennox air conditioning and furnace systems and services all brands. Reliable also provides senior discounts. Reliable Heating and Cooling, serving you from North, Mid, and West County exchanges. The next time you call Reliable at 423-3535, please thank them for being an AM 850 KFUO underwriter.
It is certainly true that disaster has left its mark both on our nation and our world. If you would like to help people who are suffering through these difficult times, think about LCMS World Relief and Human Care. Their unique mission is to strengthen local Lutheran partners, including congregations, human care organizations, missionaries, partner churches, all to respond to Christ's love by serving their communities. For more information, go to lcms.org/worldrelief.
The St. Louis Art Museum is an oasis of cool during the hot summer months in St. Louis. While there escaping the heat, you can explore the culture of all times and places, have lunch, and shop a little. The museum shows this summer include The Immediate Touch, German, Austrian, and Swiss drawings from the St. Louis collections, 1946 to 2007. A show offering an insider's view of the region's obsession with all things Germanic. Visit www.slam.org.
Chess. Mastering chess provides an opportunity to master also the principles of life. In fact, I would rather go to a chess book to learn the principles of life than a Bible, and I'll tell you why. So often, people think the Bible is going over principles of life, when in reality they are not. They're really going over principles of common sense. Let me give you a principle of life that chess tells you. First of all, I'll always say the chess principle, and then we'll move to life. 64 squares. If you control more than half of the squares on the board, you have an advantage. Now, that makes sense, doesn't it? There's 64 squares, you control 32 of them, you're going to have an advantage. Well, what does that mean in life? Well, here in St. Louis recently, we heard the shocking news that the Busch Brewery, Budweiser and Company, is being sold to a foreign conglomerate. And, of course, as soon as I heard that, I said, why would the Busch people want to do that? Well, I'll tell you why. They don't. Then why don't they stop it? See, I'm assuming it's called Busch Brewery, so it's owned by the Bushes, which means they can stop selling anybody they want. Well, the answer to that is, in light of some legal reasons, they no longer have half of the stock. They don't control the company anymore. Somebody who comes in and has purchased more of the stock can do that. And you know how many stockholders would be willing to sell their shares to somebody who's going to give them quite a bit more, even if it means the loss of Anheuser-Busch from the Bush family? Now, what happened here? Well, as any businessman will tell you, if you don't control more than half of the, in this case, stocks, you don't have an advantage. And if you control half of the stocks, you have a definite advantage, because that means you have a bigger vote. Now, what does that mean also, say, in a family? Well, the family or community of a city, any politician will tell you that to control the election, he needs to have more than one half of the votes in order to be elected. In fact, if you take a look at nature, like wolves and other wild animals, they really do understand this principle. They know the importance of territory. That's their version of the chess squares on a board. And they put their scent down, so they're marking their territory. I was watching Animal Planet or something recently where the mother got killed, and so the lion cub kind of wandered into an area that was somebody else's territory. Well, the lion cub didn't last very long. You see, when we're dealing with God, none of these principles may hold true. As we saw in the Old Testament, for example, where a large army is coming against Israel, and that night God has them thinking that there is a huge enemy in the camp, and they start fighting each other, so that by morning all of them are dead. God took care of the whole army without one Israelite losing his life. So God can take these principles, but we're talking about where there is not divine intervention in the sense of a supernatural act. Many of these principles are really quite helpful. So that if you're going to buy a business and you want to operate it the way you want, then it's good to make sure you own at least half of the shares. And in a family, as I was about to say, you really want to, when we say own the family, that doesn't mean that they're just your children or brothers or sisters or spouses or this kind of thing. To truly own them means that they want to be owned by you, or at least want to have a great relationship with you. And so, in a sense, the way popular songs are is a way that chess is, that what's very important is trying to be in a good relationship with as many people as possible in order that your goals down the line will come to fruition. Now, maybe you're beginning to hear already that chess is not a theology of the cross, which means chess doesn't work on the basis of selfless ambition. No, chess is war. Chess works on the basis of what, if I do this, what's in it for me? And really, that's how you do operate in the temporal realm, especially in business. For example, you don't want to have a product. Let's say it's food for children. And you see that there are so many people in your city who need food that instead of selling it for $1.10, where you'd be making about 20 cents profit, you want to sell it for 50 cents. Which means every time one is sold for 50 cents, you just lost 60 cents. See, that's not good business. Good business is making sure you give a product that people will want, that they will buy, and yet leaves you in a position where you can continue to produce that product at very little cost. Very little cost. Here's another principle. As I've already said, there's two sets of colors on a chessboard. Most times it's black and white, but as long as there's a light color and a dark color. A pawn is those little guys that can only make one move forward at a time, except at the very beginning they can make two, and they take people by going sideways. Well, a pawn is said always to be on the opposite color square of your bishop. Now, your bishop is the one that can go diagonally, and remember, if you have a king left, a rook, some pawns, and a bishop, the idea is get your pawns on a different color than your bishop. Why? Because your bishop, if he's on the white color, on the white squares, he can't do anything on the dark squares. Therefore, they are unprotected. But if you put your pawns on the dark squares, then the bishop is kind of protecting the light-colored squares, and the pawns are protecting the dark-colored squares, and you have more protection. You're dealing with more of the board than your opponent is. Now, what principle there is helpful? It's a principle that I advise everyone to follow unless you're doing a crime, and that is teamwork. Have you ever thought about doing a crime? What would be the perfect crime you would do? Well, I have these thoughts every now and then. I'm not sure what I would do, but I'll tell you what I wouldn't do. I wouldn't have any partners. Nobody else would ever know about it. Simply because, how many times have you seen in a movie where the weaker criminal of the two decides to make a deal to save his skin? He may only get 3 years in jail instead of six if he testifies against you, who's going to get 20 years in jail. So this principle I'm about to say doesn't work in crime, but in business, and we even do this in evangelism, the principle embodies the essence of teamwork. Teamwork. When we send people out on evangelism, Jesus sent them out two by two. But in that day, of course, he was sending out his disciples, and as far as we know, he was just sending out men. Today, though, there are women who enjoy being part of the evangelism team, so we always sent out in threes. And that was for a very simple reason. Number one, three people are a little bit more formidable than two. Because many of the times we went out was when it was dark at night. But the other reason was, is that if you sent out in twos, occasionally you would get a male and a female going out, and maybe they were both married, and they were about the same age, and so that there would be no unnecessary talk, we always sent out in threes. And three heads are better than two anyway. Who knows, you're in the front room of a house, and you're doing evangelism, you're talking about Jesus. You are asked a question, you don't know the answer, but maybe one of the other two do. So there are a number of reasons why teamwork actually multiplies the amount of items that get done. Even though you're using an extra, in evangelism case, two people, where one could have been sufficient, you still do it for a number of reasons. Now, one of the principles of chess, and this is one I hadn't realized. In fact, I thought they were lying. But a chess board is identical to a checkers board. They have 64 squares. And I always thought that if you went diagonally, you would be going more squares than if you went straight up the board. So if you're in the lower left-hand corner of the board and you go straight up, guess what? That's eight squares. Surprisingly, if you go diagonally across the board, that's the same length. It's, again, just eight squares. Now, what's the principle of life here? Well, it's not so much where you are going as how you will get there. Many a time, there are various routes that can be carefully chosen. And those who pay attention to what goes into each alternative route will get the most out of whatever trip they are going to take. In fact, I believe Mr. Lettner in the afternoon show was talking about a gift that he had gotten from his wife and kids. It's I call it a TomTom because that's what I would have got in the car. I think his was a Garmin or something like this. But it tells you, you type in the address, it knows where you're at, and it tells you how to get there. And he had typed in an address of where they were going for a little vacation, and it took him a different route than he expected to be going, and he says it saved him 45 minutes. Now, you would think looking at the map, you'd be able to figure that out. But sometimes when you don't see an expressway, you don't realize that the two-lane roads are still 60 miles an hour and there's probably nothing on them, no stoplights, and you can make almost as good a time and a lot shorter a time and distance. The point I'm making here is that you've got a goal. And, of course, our goals tend to be myopic in the sense that you look at it in one way. Let's say you're going to be a nurse or a physician or something like that. And so your goal is, well, first I get through grade school, then high school, then college, then go to medical school, then get a practice. But you may not have enough money to do all that. And so another route would be that you would have a part-time job, go to some night classes. You still will reach the goal. It'll just take 2 years longer than normal. So alternative routes are one of the things that chess people are always looking for. You take a look and you see, I got to get to this square, or I got to put this king in check or something. What's my fastest way to do that? What's my easiest way to do that? So chess, just playing chess, teaches you to look for alternative routes. Now, what's so fascinating about chess is in the class I was in, there just so happened to be a grade school teacher who was teaching inner city kids the game of chess. And he was telling us the reason he does that is it really gets kids who have not had hardly any kind of training in the classics, it really gets them thinking for themselves. Now, how many times have you ever played chess on a computer, which gives you the ability to take a move back, and you're going along and you make what you think is a tremendous move, and all of a sudden you forgot about that bishop way over there or that knight way over there or something like that, and you wish you could have the move over? Well, on a computer, you just go click, remove, start over. So it's real easy to make moves. Really, somebody who loses playing a computer when you have that capability isn't that good a player at all, because you can always reverse it if you don't like what happened. But that's an important thing to keep in mind, that you want to be teamwork and you want to realize that the goal you need to reach could be reached in a number of ways. Don't be discouraged when your primary way is blocked. Think of another way to do it. Now, another principle of chess, because the pawns are so insignificant, normally you're taught to leave them alone. Unless you have what's called a passed pawn or a center pawn. The center of the board, whoever controls that is going to win the game, by and large. So if there's a pawn there, you might want to get rid of it. But a passed pawn is when there is no one on either side of it, other pawns, to knock it out of the game. You're going to have to bring in a big boy, a big piece, to knock the pawn out of the way. So leave the pawns alone. What does this mean? Well, what it means is in chess, for example, you can see a pawn all by itself, and you could take it, and you're not going to get taken. And so you move down there, you take that pawn, you feel real good, you got 1 point, and all of a sudden, he comes out of nowhere. He moves a piece. The piece behind what he moved puts your king in check. The piece he moved now can get your queen if you don't move the queen, but you can't move the queen because your king is in check. You have to move the king. So by going after this little pawn, which meant nothing, you just lost your big queen. This is how complex the game of chess is. Now, what does that mean for life? Well, when you make a commitment to do something, You need to look at the big picture. How many of us get weighed down with the really simple matters of every day, so much so that you don't get the big stuff done? You've got to get your little things in place first. For a long time, I would write a sheet of paper about what I had to do for the month, what I had to do for the week, what I had to do for the day, and then little pieces of paper, what I do when I leave here to come to the radio program and come back. So I had paper all over the place. And until I kind of brought it all together in one sheet of paper with just a second one, what I do each day, I was spending a lot of time just getting organized. Well, it's so nice not to have to be organized to such a level every day that you only have a couple of hours left to do any work. This can also be really true in a shop. If you've got a business, it's nice to be really organized, and you should to a degree be organized. But if you spend all your time in making sure all the pieces of the job are in order, you don't put out any product. And so, don't go after the little things and keep up on them, because you'll spend all your time just doing that. You finally have to break away from that and go and do a big thing. Now, one of the other tremendous things, the knights. Remember, these are the characters that can make right angle jumps. So, if you have a knight in the middle of the board, he has the potential of going to eight different squares. So 1/8 of the board he's in control of. That's pretty good. The problem is the opponent is going to come after them, knights. So you need to protect them with pawns. And that's where pawns are real helpful. They'll come up behind a knight in such a way that if anybody takes the knight, you're going to be able to take whatever took your knight with the pawn. Now, what principle does this have for life? Well, nobody is an island. We need support from family, friends, congregational members, all of this to get anything of value accomplished. In a sense, we are all knights because we are at our best with lots of support. And I'm not saying specific physical help. But I'm talking about support in a way that you get commended for it. Occasionally where you need some help, suggestions are made. But this is the way life is. No man is an island. That's correct. No man is an island. God has placed us on this earth in community. And by learning the principles of chess, you reach a stated goal. Well, that's so also in a lot of areas of life. If you've been listening to the presidential candidates, how many of them are now speaking about going to war with each other? Now, they don't mean real war. Nobody's taking a gun, shooting anybody else. But they do mean a war of chess, so to speak, where one's ideas are going to be thrown at another and see what kind of defense he has. See if he breaks down. And if he doesn't, then he'll go on to be president of the United States. Cooperative action, therefore, is efficient action. Lack of action due to a lack of opportunity becomes very inefficient indeed. Now, certain pieces do a lot better when there are openings for them to accomplish their tasks. Remember I said a rook can go either straight up and down or straight sideways. But if his own pieces are in the way, then he cannot attack anyone on the other side of his own pieces. So he's always looking for what's called an open file. The column that goes up and down on a chessboard is called a file. The one that goes sideways is called a rank instead of row. The way I like remembering it, row begins with R, rank begins with R. This is just chess speak. Files are up and down. Now, a rook can go up and down, and if there's nothing in front of him, he can go all the way to the end in one swell move. He does not have to go step by step. He can shoot all the way down and actually go into check against the king. And if there's not something there to stop him, the king either is going to have to move or there can be a full checkmate. Therefore, rooks that go up and down need open spaces, and do as bishops do, who only go diagonal. What good is having a bishop when all the diagonals are covered by your own people? So the point that we want to make here is everybody in your family, everybody at work, everybody at church, they move differently than one another. Some people move very well in a position of leadership, such as an elder. Others move very well in the position of finance. They're on the board of finance, or they are on the county team. Others move very well in the area of counseling, so they could maybe be a good Sunday school teacher or Bible class reviewer. That is to say that not all of us have the same kind of likes and dislikes. And what Chess tells us is, know your pieces, know your people, know where they best are able to serve by what God has placed in their heart. And that doesn't necessarily come about by them asking a whole bunch of questions. It can also just come about by watching and see where they're very comfortable. I know of a radio talk show host, I won't mention his name, who will not go on radio talk shows where he has to answer questions. He'll be glad to go on radio, but it always has to be taped. It's kind of interesting. Whoever would have thought? And so it's a lot more difficult than people think to try and find the gifts. What we're doing today, we're taking a look at the game of chess to see how it's really a theology of glory. That is, you're making moves in order to advance your cause. Now, sometimes if your cause is also God's cause, then these principles can be helpful. Such as what I just said, you'd find people in the congregation that are more suitable for evangelism or for stewardship or for the helping services, etc. When we get back from the break, we'll go a little more deeper into some of these principles that chess shows us that really mimic life. Now, not life with God in the sense of how to get right with God. There's nothing in chess I've seen that gets you right with God. But getting right with a neighbor, how to act around the neighbor, what things you expect as sacrifices and what things you expect are just going to come about, that's what you take a look at. So please stay with us through the break. And you can phone us at 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727.
Law and Gospel with Tom Baker, Monday through Friday at 1:05 p.m. on AM 850 KFUO. You can write Pastor Tom at AM 850 KFUO, 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. Or at this email address, lawgospel@lawgospel.com.